Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On October 14th, 2020, the Supreme Court heard Pareda v. Barr, an immigration case. The question before the court was whether a criminal conviction bars a non-citizen from applying for relief from removal when the record of conviction is merely ambiguous as to whether it corresponds to an offense listed in the Immigration and Nationality Act. More specifically, the court heard arguments regarding whether Mr. Pareda, who used a false Social Security card to get a job, could legally seek relief from deportation since he was never charged with any specific violation of Section 240A, B1C of the Immigration and Nationality Act. Brian Fish joins us today to discuss this case's oral arguments. Mr. Fish is Special Assistant to the United States Attorney of Baltimore, Maryland.
From crimmigration land. I like to call it crimmigration where it's the Venn diagram of where criminal law meets immigration law. Think of Venn diagram created by the Mad Hatter. It's insane. There's no way out, and it's all our own darn fault. And that sort of sums up most criminal immigration cases, and today is no exception. Today, we're a few hours to go on the courthouse steps, or as I like to say, my dining room table. I heard the arguments in Pareda versus Barr, yet another immigration-related case that how criminal law applies to immigration law. And right off the bat, I'll give you the issue presented and then tell you what it really means. So the issue is, in this particular case, does a state-level conviction bar an alien from applying for relief, just applying for relief, if the conviction is ambiguous as to whether it corresponds to an offense in the Immigration and Nationality Act? Now, that was a mouthful. Basically, what the question is, If bad guy is convicted of a crime and nobody can tell what crime he was convicted of, who wins? Does the bad guy win, the criminal alien? Because if nobody can show what he was convicted of, does he skate by? Or does the government, in this case through the Department of Homeland Security, who brings the immigration charging case to the immigration court, does the department win because it's the alien's burden to show that he was not convicted of a certain kind of crime? So it's one of those, how do you prove or disprove the negative? And like so many cases that come before the court, or any court for that matter, it's a fact case. And in this particular case, the facts line up much stronger for the sympathetic criminal alien. Here's the skinny. We have Mr. Pareda, who is a Mexican national, who EWI'd, as we say in criminal immigration land, EWI'd. He entered without inspection 25 years ago, and he has three kids, one of which is a United States citizen. And there's nothing in the record to indicate that he did anything else other than the illegal entry and the criminal case that brought him to, years later, the Supreme Court today. So what did he done do? What he done did was he was convicted in Nebraska of something called attempted criminal impersonation. He was fined $100 and sent on his way by the Nebraska court. The underlying facts of that case are that he used a fake Social Security number to get a job. And ladies and gentlemen, that's it. Those are the facts. And we're not talking about a gang banging, rapist, murdering, et cetera, et cetera. We are simply talking about a guy that came in years and years and years and years and years and years ago to work and provide for his family. The quintessential sympathetic alien. But he got that conviction. So let's talk about what he did or what he was convicted of or what we think he might have been convicted of, which is the heart of this case. Attempted criminal impersonation. For immigration purposes, the parties don't care whether you are convicted of an attempted something or a conspiracy to commit a something. So that's out of the way. So we've got a criminal impersonation. And does that, the heart of the question is that does that offense constitute a crime involving moral turpitudinous? A CIMT. What is a CIMT? Well, it was created, that term was created by Congress years and years ago. And of course, they said absolutely nothing in the statute about what is a CIMT. So therefore, we have literally thousands upon thousands of both administrative law and district and circuit and Supreme Court decisions trying to explain what a CIMT is. And what we've come up with is three things. It's a crime that involves fraud, theft, or deception that goes against the community standards of morality. What we have in this particular case and why this case came to the Supreme Court is Nebraska has a criminal statute for criminal impersonation that has four subsections. Three of the four subsections are, without a doubt, a CIMT. The fourth subsection is not. And the reason this case is here today is who has to show which subsection your person is convicted of, and if nobody can show which subsection of a potential CIMT someone is convicted of, if no one can show that, does the case get to go forward, or does the immigration case end at that point with a removal order, in this case, back to Mexico? Well, What occurred in the immigration proceedings was that at the time that Mr. Pareto was discovered by immigration officers, he was given what's called a notice to appear. That's the immigration charging document telling you to go to immigration court. The NTA, the notice to appear, is pretty much two sections. First section is the allegation section. The second is the immigration charge. Mr. Pareto was charged as a simple entry without inspection. In other words, he came in illegally. He wasn't caught at the border. We have the United States government has no idea when he came in and where he came in. So the allegation part of the NTA was simply, you are not a United States citizen or native. You are a citizen and a native of Mexico. You came in at an unknown time and an unknown location. And finally, you were not inspected by an immigration officer. Those four allegations gave rise to one immigration charge, which is you are present or you entered into the United States without inspection. That's it. In immigration court, the first step of the court proceedings is called a master calendar hearing, where the immigration judge reads off, in this case, what I just explain to you the allegations and the immigration charge. In 1,000 cases, 999 times, the alien will say, I admit the allegations and concede the charge. At that point, the government's job is done. They have established removability, and the alien has conceded that he is, in fact, removable. The alien will next say, but please, Your Honor, don't order me removed. I would like to file for, and then fill in the blank. So I'd like to file for asylum, adjustment of status, temporary protected status, special immigrant juvenile status, or whatever else the alien thinks he or she might be eligible for. I'd like to apply for that before Your Honor. At that step, it's now the alien's burden to prove that he or she is eligible for the relief sought. In this particular case, Mr. Pareda was asking for something called cancellation of removal for a non-permanent resident. So in other words, Mr. Pareda doesn't have his green card. He's not a permanent resident, LPR. And he has to file a 42B application to show that he's eligible for relief. He has to show just a couple of things. He's been in the country 10 years. There is an exceptional and extremely unusual hardship to a qualifying family member, which is a United States citizen or lawful permanent resident, parent, spouse, or child. And he has to show, and this is the important one for today's hearing, good moral character, and that he has not committed any CIMTs. There, that is a CIMT again. So, is back to Nebraska and his criminal impersonation, is that a CIMT? And if it is, then the case is over. He doesn't get to file the application and get to the discretionary stage of the hearing before the immigration judge. He's done. And if he can't, now to the statutory question before the court today, if neither party can show what he was convicted of, does the case get to proceed, or does that end it? Because if it's his burden, and that's the key, if it's the alien's burden to show he was not convicted of a CIMT, then if he can't do it, he can't do it. The case should be over. This case is at its heart incredibly simple. The statute itself, the Immigration and Nationality Act, clear as day, black and white, says it's the response, the code that encompasses the Immigration Nationality Act under 8 CFR, what are we at here, 1240 et al. The code says the exact same thing, that it's the burden of the respondent to show that he has met his burden for eligibility to even apply for it. So the statute says it. The code says it. Case law says it. But we're here today arguing yet again whose burden it is to show whether a conviction meets the threshold, but even more so than if the conviction meets the threshold of showing that in this case it's a crime involving moral turpitude, but whose burden is it to prove? And we go back and forth, and we're not getting any answer by Pareda's counsel to that most basic question, because he wants to talk about case law, not about the statute and what the statute said. My chuckle out loud moment was actually provided by Justice Sotomayor, who right off the bat, when she started asking questions, said, look, is there any other reason why you should win? Because I'm not sure if I can go with you. I, as I'm doing now, chuckling, is like, wow, is there anything? And then she asked, is there any reason why I could vote to vacate and send the case back? And Paredes' counsel dejectedly said, no, Your Honor, we tried a petty offense exception, but that was rejected. Pretty much this is all we got. Well, that is all they got. Skipping forward a bit to the DOJ argument, pretty standard stuff, as I've said, as well it should have been, because he just simply argued what the statute actually says. Shocking that we should, you know, go to actually what the statute says, because in this case, the statute, the Real ID Act, which created the cancellation form of relief, was done by Congress because what was in existence prior to that, which was something called the suspension of deportation, was getting abused by the immigration court system. They were granting just about everybody suspension who was applying for it. Congress had enough, dispensed with suspension, created cancellation, made it much harder to get it. It's essentially the highest, probably the second highest, most difficult thing to be able to show as a respondent, alien in immigration court. And they specifically said in the congressional record that they were doing so because they wanted it to be difficult, not easy to get. Well, Alito yet again asked the most pertinent question of the government counsel. When we're talking about the burdens of proof and the shifting burdens of proof, it's sort of like the ping pong going back and forth across the table. What is the burden of proof that we're talking about? Is it a burden of proof of persuasion or a burden of proof of production of documents to show a certain thing? Counsel responded, both, and he was absolutely correct. The respondent alien has the burden of proof to show both the documentary evidence to show, in his case, that he was not convicted of something, and he's got to persuade the immigration judge that he should have the cancellation granted as a matter of discretion. So you need both. And that was spot on by questioning by Justice Alito and the right answer by government counsel. It's the alien's burden to show this. And so the takeaway that I have from this case is you need to start with the statute itself. No one's arguing that the Immigration and Nationality Act, or as it's been modified by the Real ID Act in 2005, is unconstitutional, at least not in this case. So if the act is constitutional, then Congress clearly showed that it wants the burden to be on the alien to show eligibility. If he can't show that he's eligible to even apply for something, even if it's no fault of his own, he still loses.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.